There's five green frogs. They're sitting on a log. Four of the frogs decide to jump off. How many are left? Any guesses? Five green frogs, four jump off. Four. All right. There's five. Because deciding to do something is not the same as actually doing it. Today's message is about procrastination. I call them anti-quotes. It's quotes about procrastination, but maybe not the typical approach to procrastination. There's a few that I like. One is, I don't procrastinate. I wait until the last minute to do things because I will be older and therefore wiser. I found that one to come in valuable. Another one is, why do today what you can put off to do tomorrow? Furthermore, never put off until tomorrow what you can avoid doing altogether. If maybe you wanted to do an advertising slogan, this might be a good one. Procrastination, working tomorrow for a better today. Or this is one that I find, I don't know, for some reason it's especially good, is to, when you're accused of procrastination, just state, I haven't even started to procrastinate yet. So today we're going to go into what I'm going to say is a story about a man named Nathan. So, you know, we don't want to reveal anyone's identity, keep it all secretive. Several years ago, a neighbor kid kicked a football and shattered a small basement window on Nathan's house. Nathan had a family of six. They were all living together on a teacher's salary. Not a whole lot of extra money to go around for these repairs. So Nathan boarded it up, thinking he'll just get to it someday. The frame was rusted shut, and Nathan was convinced it was a lost cause. Over the years, he would sometimes get estimates from window companies, thinking he might maybe kill two birds with one stone, replace the other windows that matched it. There were five other windows that were just the same window. Get them all done and get more efficient windows. Two birds with one stone. But then those quotes always came back for thousands of dollars, and can't do that. That's not an option. In the meantime, the boarded up window failed at everything you might ask of a window. It let all the bugs in and kept all the light out. One contractor explained to him that the location of the window being embedded in the foundation of the house meant that whoever replaced it would have to chisel it out by hand, which is a labor-intensive and expensive process. One that they would have to do for that window and every one of the other windows that they replaced in that basement. The thought of that window sitting there not being a window ate at Nathan for years. Every year, or every time he went down to his basement or to Home Depot or just anyone else's basement that had good windows, it would bother him. It nagged at him. He knew he needed to address it, but he had built up the process and the price so much in his head that he was paralyzed and did nothing. Fast forward a few years, Nathan's wife had a job change and they needed to move. He knew that the potential buyer would order an inspection and that he would end up having to get the window replaced to sell the house. So he pulled off the board covering the window and decided he's going to face this thing head on. With nothing to lose, he grabbed some WD-40, sprayed all around the rusted frame, gave it a tug, and whoop, out it comes. He took it down to the window repair shop, got it repaired, took it back, and after 5 years of aggravation and putting it off, that window was now repaired and reinstalled for $12 and a few minutes of his time. The kicker was that he could have done that same repair 5 years ago on the very day that it had broken. Same amount of time, same amount of money. 5 years, he would have been able to have been keeping the bugs out, letting light in, enjoying his own basement. But it wasn't until it was going to be someone else's basement that he got together the motivation to try and make it whole again. Now, I'm sure this story is definitely not about me. Maybe it's not about any of you, but I'm pretty sure all of us probably have similar stories that at least share a little bit of that truth. There's four lessons that I feel like we can draw from this straight off the bat, and we'll just go through those real quickly. The first is, an imperfect solution now is better than a perfect solution that will never happen. Second lesson, doing what needs to be done is often less painful than thinking about doing it. Acknowledging how the problem is affecting you can reduce its power over you. And the fourth one, sometimes the ticket is just to get started. I say that story is not about me, but I have many stories very much like it. I remember a few years ago, we were going to change the shingles on our roof, and I just dreaded. I kept finding reasons of what else I had to do before I could do that. Came down to it, as soon as I started popping that shingle off, and rain's a coming, you just got to do it. So sometimes we learn it the hard way. And those two examples kind of showcase there's multiple ways it can turn out. Sometimes it can be really easy and you're like, why did I build this up? And other times it's just that you just got to keep your head down and keep going once you start. But now we come to another part of this message, and that message is, what does the Bible say about procrastination? As I was researching this, I found that the English Standard Version, while not the best, really kind of laid out a lot of these scriptures in a way that I thought was helpful. The Bible commends hard work and industriousness. This is the first portion that the Bible spoke to. I'm just going to read these scriptures, not really expound a whole lot on them, but supporting this point, the Bible commends hard work and industriousness. Proverbs 12 and verse 24 states that the hand of the diligent will rule, while the slothful will be put to forced labor. Proverbs 13 and verse 4 says, the soul of the sluggard craves and gets nothing, while the soul of the diligent is richly supplied. I think that's a strong case for just working hard. The second point is, the Bible condemns laziness. Proverbs 15 and verse 19, the way of the sluggard is like a hedge of thorns, but the path of the upright is a level highway. Proverbs 18 and verse 9, whoever is slack in his work is a brother to him who destroys. And then Proverbs 20 and verse 4, you'll notice this is all in Proverbs, so if you need to get going on something, maybe that's a good place to start. Proverbs 20 and verse 4 says, the sluggard does not plow in the autumn. He will seek at harvest and have nothing. Our inner procrastinator loves tomorrow, but only because we don't clearly see tomorrow. If we did, we would notice that the coming harvest and we would notice the coming harvest and know that today's nap might be tomorrow's barren field. In other words, we reap tomorrow what we sow today. But overcoming procrastination isn't just about, as they say, picking yourself up by your bootstraps. We may have to do that to beat procrastination now, but it seems that if we do, we can destroy it later and reap the benefits. Dr. Andrew Huberman is a tenured professor at the Stanford School of Medicine. And according to Huberman, the anterior mid-cingulate cortex, hereafter referred to the AMCC, because who wants to say that over and over again, is the brain's control center for resolve and perseverance. He explains how tackling difficult tasks, especially when you least feel like it, strengthens the AMCC. Think of it as a workout for your willpower. Pushing yourself through exercise, new activities, or overcoming difficult obstacles activates the AMCC, making you more self-controlled and determined. Huberman's research has demonstrated that stimulation of the AMCC stimulates its physical growth, and that the physical size of the AMCC can be shown to correlate with both quality of life and longevity. This is yet again another example of a trend that I've recognized a lot of, where God's wisdom manifests itself in such a way that living God's way is actually living the best way, even if it's against what society's pushing us towards. I kind of felt the need on the drive in today to veer off script a little bit here and mention, I don't know if anyone's watching the Olympics currently. They just started. The opening night was, I think, last night or the night before, last night. And if you watched it, probably didn't, but there was a section of the opening ceremony where they reenacted Leonardo da Vinci's Last Supper picture with drag queens. And also, the Democratic candidate for president formally announced her candidacy on a televised drag show. And so I feel like this sort of thing manifests not only in our daily, you know, to-do list, tasks, and things that we do day in and day out, but it also manifests because we are to be a force for good. We are to be soldiers, God's army, that is fighting on the side of good. And this is evil that we're seeing. And I think it's real easy for us, and knowing what we know about God's plan of salvation, to look at it and say, God's going to take care of it. Good will win in the end. We all know that. But in the meantime, we have to do now what's, we have to be a force for good now. And that kind of weighed on me as I was driving in. It doesn't necessarily fit super well with the rest of this message, but of course, God doesn't need our help. He can accomplish what he's going to do with or without us. But if the story of the parable of the unprofitable servant tells us anything, that we're not really called to just hide what we're given in a hole in the ground and then turn it back to God when he comes asking. We're commanded to do more. We'll finish today with one more scripture that really summarizes and overshadows all of these things that we've discussed in this message. That passage is in Colossians 3 and verse 23. Probably a memory scripture for you. Should be, certainly could be. Whatever you do, do it with all your heart, as working for the Lord and not for men.